Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Subban. Subban is a lawyer and took sannyas in 1979. After living in India with Osho for 10 years, Subban has been traveling worldwide to facilitate meditation, workshops and counseling sessions. I'm so happy to have Subban on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Subban, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, Swaram. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to share some things with you today.
Okay, so to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Let me just first correct. I'm technically still a member of the bar as a lawyer, but I haven't practiced since about 1986. My work now is working with people in workshops and sessions. I'm a certified counselor here in Seattle. So how I found Osho, I didn't find him. He found me. that's the feeling that I have. In 1979, I was in Baltimore, Maryland as a criminal lawyer, and I felt like I was really lost. I had read a number of people, Ram Dass, Meher Baba, Krishnamurti, Alan Watts, and I can go on and on. But having read all of those books, I still couldn't find a voice that really spoke to me. It all sounded interesting, but it really didn't touch me. And then I went for lunch one day in January of 1979, and outside of the restaurant, I met a friend of mine that I hadn't seen in 14 years, and he came up to me, and his first words were, "How are you doing?" And I heard myself say to him, "Do you really want to know?" which I had never said to anybody before or since. And he looked at me and very sincerely said, "Yes, I want to know. How are you doing?" And I told him I felt like I was taking two or three steps forward and about 10 steps backwards. Anyway, he suggested that I go into the bookstore next to the restaurant, which was the Aquarian Age bookstore, and it was owned by his brother, Bennett. And I walked in, sat down, and he came over, introduced himself, and I told him I had met his brother outside. And then again, I heard myself say something that I wouldn't normally say, which was, "Of all the books in this store, is there one you'd recommend over all the others?" And he looked at me with like a twinkle in his eye and told me to come with him. And I walked over to a table. It had maybe 9 or 10 Osho books and pictures of Osho. In those days, the books had him usually wearing funny hats. He took a photographic session with wearing about 20 or 30 different hats. And they were on the covers of a lot of the books in those days. And then I said to myself, "Oh my God, not another Indian guru bullshitter." That was what came out of me. But I still bought 3 of his books. To this day, I can't tell you why. There was something that was calling me for sure. And I took them home and I started reading the first one, which the title now is called Tantra, the Supreme Understanding. In those days, it was called Only One Sky, published in the U.S. Anyway, I started reading that book and I started laughing and I started crying. And I felt like he was saying things that I always knew, but that I couldn't put into words. And I was just so deeply, deeply touched by what he had said. And I finished that book, read the other 2 books, went back to the store, got the rest of the books, then recognized that there were meditation centers that were listed in the back of the books, and found one that was about 40 miles from where I lived. Went there, heard his voice for the first time. And after a couple of visits, the woman who was running the center said, "I think you've gotten everything I can give you here. Why don't you go to David Deep in Washington, D.C., which was about another 8-10 miles from where she lived. And I wound up going there and met some fabulous people. And that was the place where I learned dynamic and Kundalini. And it was my stepping off point. In a short while, in September of that year, I was in Pune. I had to meet this man. I had to find out more about him. And I took sannyas when I arrived there in October 2nd of 1979.
So you arrived to Osho in 1979, mm-hmm. and you were a qualified lawyer. And I understand you started out in the commune offering your legal services. However, you transitioned to become a group leader and meditation facilitator. So I'm curious to hear how that transition happened from the world of law to the inner world of meditation.
Yeah, that's a good question. In 1979, I actually stopped practicing criminal law. And the feeling at that time was that I didn't want to do law anymore, that it was not satisfying. When I worked with people, there was really no way that I could be of assistance to them in any possible way of transforming their lives. So in 1981, I began doing law work with and for the commune and for the different corporations that were set up in the U.S. In 1985, the end of 85, December, I left the commune, I left the ranch, and Shanti and I went to the East Coast back to my home in Annapolis, Maryland, and I decided to open up a store, which was a dream of mine for since I was a kid. I was a collector. I loved old things, and I had a massive baseball card collection at one point, about 100,000 cards, and I had stamps and coins and other collectible things. And so when it came time after we left the ranch, what were we going to do for money? Because we basically had almost nothing at that time. It was, let's start a business called Anything Collectible. And I named it that because I wanted it to be anything. I didn't want it to be limited. And we wound up opening up a small store. First day we made $200. The second day we made 25 cents. And I knew that I'd have to do something in order for us to survive financially. So I started practicing law again in Annapolis. I was a member of the Maryland State Bar. And for about 6 months, did law work. And then the store started to really catch on, and many, many people started coming. And that's when I stopped practicing. And I haven't practiced since then. So the joy of being in a collectibles business, an antique and collectibles business, was just like a dream come true. And I always refer to that time. We had a store for about 3 years, that it was the beginning of a workshop that I started doing in Pune in 1988 called Finding the Work You Love. And it actually is now Finding the Work You Love, Finding the Life You Love. And I'm still doing it 30 years later. And I love the work, and I love working with people in a number of different areas. And that was the first step. So I took the joy and the success that came as a result of the joy with me, and created this process called Finding the Work You Love. And we sold the business in 1988 and went to Pune because Osho had returned there, and we wanted to get there and be with him. And so I created the workshop to share with people, because I knew that this was an issue that many people had told me they had, that they were doing work that they just simply didn't enjoy, but they didn't know how to get out of it. They didn't know how to find what it is that really touched them.
Sounds like you have gone through your own personal journey of transformation, and then you developed this course somehow to help others realize what you yourself realize in your own life. And I must say, you've been like a pioneer, because just recently there are so many courses around promoting exactly what you were doing back in the 80s. Find your purpose, find your mission, transform your passion into a business. It's almost too much going on now. So
If I can interrupt for one second. The one thing that people did not do then, the few people that were doing that work, and people that do not do now, is it seems, from what I've read virtually every book that comes out, because I'm always curious to see where people are going with this understanding, and that is that they never seem to connect with the way the mind functions. And people can find what they love to do. People can find ways of creating a dream around it. But starting to take the steps in the direction of that dream just seems to be where everybody falls down. And the reason, as I understood it very quickly, because I was being educated by the people that were coming to the workshops, was that they had something inside of them that simply stopped them. They had obstacles. And so I started working with obstacles as basically the key. I could help people find things they enjoyed. I could help them translate that into something like a dream and then translate the next steps that could help them move into that area. But they would not do that until 1988 when I realized, wow, I've got to start helping people look at and explore and understand what are the obstacles. And it came down to the obstacles of the mind and the way the mind functions, which is Osho's territory, totally. And so that became the difference between the work that I do and finding the work you love and what I see other people doing. Now, maybe there are people that are looking at the obstacles in some ways, but Osho was such a foundation for me to know all the obstacles that stood in my way and have and still stand in my way with the mind and the way it functions.
And in fact, I'd love to expand a little bit more on that, if you can go a bit deeper into how Osho influenced you or changed you personally and in the work you do, and what kind of insight you got meditating and living with Osho that helps you in the work you do today.
That's a big topic. And let's start with, I started doing dynamic when I went to the center in Washington, D.C. And for the first 18 months of my sannyashood, I did dynamic every morning. So for a year and a half, I would do it at 7 o'clock in the morning. I did dynamic. I did it alone. I did it with people. But I knew that there was concrete kind of falling off. I didn't know where it was taking me or what was actually happening in the mind or the body, but I knew that this was absolutely right for me. And to this day, I know it's the foundation of so many of the things that I have deep understandings about now. So that was the first aspect of it. What Osho talked about the mind, in the very first book, chapter 2 of Tantra, the Supreme Understanding, the first words are, the root problem of all problems is mind itself. And that just knocked my socks off. And he started talking about mind as not being a thing, but being a process of just thoughts. So the work that I've been doing with myself, the play that I've been doing with myself, has been to find as many ways as possible to step back from the mind and be a watcher of it and to experience what it's doing. I have so many deep understandings that have come from standing in the shower and listening to the mind. I tell people you don't have to get cable. You've got the a great story going on inside the mind that if you listen to it, you recognize how crazy things are. And so that became a real significant part of my life, is just being as aware as possible to step back, to not identify with, but to just listen to, be a watcher of the mind and how it comes about in this body and what happens and what thoughts come out and what actions come out of those thoughts and what emotions come out of those. And that's been a primary focus in this process that this person called Subban is engaged in. Subban, by the way, means awareness. That's the name that Osho gave me. And I always get the feeling that I keep hearing his voice saying, I'm never going to let you sleep anymore. And so that seems to be what happens. I get hit on the head a lot.
Okay. So, I mean, first of all, you have quite a name, because, you know, to be reminded every day that people call you Subham is awareness. So you really cannot afford to fall asleep. And yes. So sounds to me that ultimately what you're doing is teaching people meditation.
Yes, that's a vital part of it. But I also, I think a real significant part of it is what I call brain food. I heard Osho say at one point that he had the workshops, the Western psychological or psychotherapeutic workshops in his ashram, because we had to first deal with the Western mind and with the volcano that we're sitting on. So we needed a lot of catharsis. We needed a lot of exploration of just how this mind is working and functioning in the Western mode. And it was tremendously significant for me to understand that. Yes, meditation is a vital part of what I do. I always include at least two of Osho's meditations every day in the workshops that I do. I do dynamic, usually in the morning. Maybe we'll do Kundalini or we'll do Nataraj, the dance meditation. And I also have a lot of very short meditations that Osho gave I have a compilation that I've been holding and working with for all these years, because every time I used to read the Darshan Diaries and he would give a meditation to someone, I'd write it down. So I kept a large stock of those, and I use them in the work that I do all the time. So you're right. It is about learning how to step back from and not identify with the mind, so that that dimension beyond the mind, which he called no mind, Buddha called no mind, is available in little teeny tastes. And what I recognized too is that as a kid, especially, I had an automobile accident when I was 19, that I actually went into meditation. I didn't know it at the time, but I'm sliding on ice into a parked car from a car that I'm driving. And it took about an hour to get, 30 feet. It seemed like that. It was like time stood still and the sounds disappeared and the silence was immense. And it was only later, much later, that I recognized that that was a meditative experience. So when I work with people, that's one of the first things that I do. I tell them, you've all had a taste. Everyone has had a taste of that space that's beyond the mind, where the mind can't figure it out. And for a moment, it disappears. When I was 8 years old or so, I'm sitting on my front lawn and I lean back and I look up at the stars. And it's that wow moment, or that oh my God moment, when the mind just can't put it into focus. And so it turns off for a flash. And then there's just that incredible expansive experience, which I now understand is the experience of meditation.
And now I had a wow moment just now, because just this morning I was thinking of someone who once said that Osho devised, over 700 meditation techniques. And I personally know the most famous one, Dynamic Kundalini, Natarajna, the Brahma, and all the rest that we have, the music recorded, etc. And I was thinking, where are all the other hundreds meditations? Now you just gave me the answer. So it looks like Osho was giving individual techniques to people asking him personal questions. So I could find those techniques in books?
Yes, you can find them there. You can also find them in the regular books that he spoke and that were made into books, because he was giving lots of times. It always shocked me, because I to this day, I'm still finding new ones when I'm doing a reading or I'm listening to him. And all of a sudden, he just says, and here's something you can try. And he just says it in a minute. And then it goes on. And so a lot of these things probably are, I think that they're all peppered into what he has said for us to find. And that's probably one of the prime reasons why I wouldn't just publish a book saying these are all the techniques that Osho has shared. It took me years to find them. It took me years to explore them and to experience them. And I think that's probably part of the work that he did, that he gave us the significant major active ones, but he also gave quite a few ones, like the darkness meditation. He gave that in the Book of the Secrets, and it's an ancient meditation. And now we have 7 days of it here every January at our center in Seattle, and I've added a little bit to it, because to just simply sit in the darkness, if you've gone through a day of sitting behind a computer and driving your car and sitting down and eating, the body and the mind need to expend some of the energy that's kind of sitting there. So we do about a half an hour of dance before we do the sitting. Then we come and sit down in our meditation space, which we make into absolute darkness. There's not even a tiny pinpoint of darkness in the room. I mean, of light in the room. So we do this again. We do it 7 days, 7 nights, every single year for the last like 12 or 13 years. And
darkness meditation is one of the most powerful, easy technique, but mm-hmm. it's really deep and powerful, and I love that. So you said that you added a little dance before the darkness meditation, because people who come to you nowadays perhaps spend the whole day sitting in front of a computer. Somehow, I think what you're doing is present the techniques also based on the people you're facing. They're coming to you, which have a different lifestyle today. So, the world is changing and we are getting much more sedentary, more digitally dependent. I'd love to hear, how did your way of teaching meditation or presenting meditation change in these 30 years or so?
Yeah, I might be repeating something that Shanti said, but when we started doing the meditation classes, one of the first things we decided was we would do an easy meditation rather than a more difficult or physical one like dynamic. So we decided to introduce the first class to Kundalini, and people were absolutely shocked by the thought of having to dance with other strangers. After being in Osho's commune for years, where dance was such a natural part of life, to be in a group of people here in Seattle that were afraid of dance. And so what I did, the first thing I did was I created for myself a process that I thought would be helpful to people. I stopped calling it dance, and I just said, we're going to do a movement exercise. And I would put the music on, and I would say, I'm going to start, and I'm just going to do some kind of movement, and then I'm going to pass it along to the person next to me, and we'll go around the circle. And so I would do some kind of a dance movement, and everybody would do it, and it was fun. It was just, you know, it was very light. And then the next person would do something like Saturday Night Live, you know, pointing the fingers, and everybody would do it. And then somebody else would start jumping. And what happened was is that everybody started dancing without the difficulty of you're not supposed to dance with strangers or whatever they came up with in their minds. And so we started doing that with our meditation groups, and people really started to enjoy it. And then the end of it was, okay, everybody, you just move the way you want to move. And I also had really good dance music with a lot of beat and rhythm in it. And that was one of the things that I used to help people start that process.
Okay. And sounds like body movement is crucial part of what you do. You need to get people moving the energies first, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People are so disconnected from their bodies and don't know it. And so, you know, one of the first things is we've got to reconnect with the physical body. The second thing is people are disconnected from their breath. They're breathing from the top of their chest, and they're holding their breath most of the time. Their stomach, their belly, the lower belly area is being held in almost by everyone. One of the things you can just play with is drop the belly, stand up and drop the belly. And you may recognize that you've been holding the belly in. And then you see all the different parts of the body that are tense as a result of it.
We mentioned a few times that with your beloved Shanti, you run a meditation center in Seattle. How is it for you to run the meditation center and sharing Osho with your partner?
You know, there's quite a bit of a story here, and I want to make it small rather than big. I opened up a meditation center when I came back from Pune in 1980. Osho gave us the name Premchaya, which means shadow of love. And what I didn't realize was he was telling me in another way that awareness was the key, because the shadow of love is awareness. I had to look and see what he had to say about shadow of love, because I wanted to find out what it really meant. And he's talking about that when you are on the path of love, you will ultimately come to awareness. So I opened the center up, and several people took sannyas, and then I closed it when Osho came to the U.S. And then when Shanti and I moved back to Annapolis, we did a little bit like a center, but we really didn't officially open up the center there. And then we went back to India. Then we went to Japan, and we reopened the center. And coming back to the U.S. in 97, the end of 97, we decided to open it here. And this was Shanti's dream. You know, she's mentioned to you that Osho said something like, when you come home, you'll be a big help to my people. So she's been very much involved in the center. And a lot of the work in the meditation center itself is primarily Shanti's bailiwick, because she still has this very strong feeling that the center has to stay open. I have a very strong feeling of moving around the planet. And so I go to Mexico several times a year. We travel to New York and San Francisco and Arizona and Colorado, and we offer and share meditations there. We go to Oregon, and we do a weekend retreat for the Labor weekend, Labor Day weekend. And I'm looking now toward moving into Europe again. I did that back in the 90s. But the work in the center, I do enjoy. I enjoy introducing dynamic here on Saturdays, and I enjoy sharing some of the meditations. And I primarily enjoy it because it gives me a structure to do meditation myself.
And I think you complement each other very well, because I definitely agree with you that it's important to bring the message of Osho meditation out there, but it's also crucial to have a place because, you know, that's how you came across Osho. You read a book and then immediately you went to find the closest Osho center where you started learning more, listening to his voice, doing the meditation. So, you know, we need sannyasins who have also physical space in different parts of the world where people can get a taste of Osho and then they start their journey. So I'm very, you know, grateful for what you guys are doing. We are heading towards the end of the show. And before I ask you three final questions, I'd love to hear what are your current projects and what you're up to.
Yeah. Well, I will be going back to Mexico, and I'll preface everything that I say now with the invitation for people to contact me. Or contact us at the center. We have a website that does put up some of this, not necessarily all of it, which is worldofmeditation.com. And we have a mailing list so people can get on it and find out what we're doing here. We do quite a number of different things. And as I said, the darkness meditation, we do a laughter meditation on New Year's Day Eve. So January 1st, we laugh in the new year. We have a New Year's Eve a party here. Part of that is meditation. We started off with a meditation. There are a number of projects that I have, and I've got a relatively long list of the workshops that I have created over the years that would include, most recently, I'm working on three projects. One is called How Can I Love Myself? I saw one of the greatest difficulties for people was to how to find this place called love within, and the second one was protections, transforming strategies for survival into thriving into life. And I saw so much of what we do is protective. We have a child's mind coming up with strategies and solutions to protect ourselves from impossible situations as children. And the third one is called Understanding the Mind and How to Go Beyond It. Almost everything I do deals with the mind. And I thought, well, I've never had a workshop that I've created that was just focused on understanding the mind. How does it function? How does it, you know, it's always wants more. How many of us know that? How many of us know that that the mind is constantly judging, that the mind is splintered, that there's many minds, that there's many personalities in there? Many, many different things that have been my experience and have been guided to me through Osho. And so I'm doing those. And I do all kinds of things with the inner critic, with money. I just did something called Making Sense Out of Money, a very, very powerful workshop. Breaking the patterns and habits that are limiting your life. These are all the areas that excite me because they start with my own personal experience. I saw the patterns and the habits that I had, and I started working with him, and I started listening to Osho. I really went through as much as I could of Osho to get some understanding from him, as well as from other people, too. And then with that, I create this is my forte. If there's anything that I do that's my art, it's creating workshops around significant areas of human growth and helping people who want me to help them by sharing my own personal experiences, by sharing what I understand through Osho. And making that available to as many people as possible.
Okay, and I'll link your website to the notes show. So if anyone is interested and they want to get in touch with you, they can click there and find you. That's great. So I've got three final questions for you. The first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
You know, when you said that to Shanti, I realized that it would be helpful if we distinguished between morning people and night people. Osho did that, and he actually gave me the foundation to really genuinely enjoy the fact that I'm a night person, even though 99% of the world are living in day world reality. I don't get up until usually 9:30, 10, 10:30, 11 o'clock, depending upon what time I go to bed. My day really starts around 1 o'clock when I will have my first sessions. And so my real work, especially in the creation of workshops and looking and exploring and doing those things and the meditations that I do are evening oriented. So that's when I become the most alive. And there is, again, in a Darshan diary where Osho told a woman who said she wanted to get up earlier, he told her from what she had said that she was a night person and that the only way to change the biological clock inside would be to change the interior part of our being, and that's not possible. And so we can start to learn how to accept the reality that there is a biological clock inside.
Yeah, so no, you're absolutely right. And in fact, there are new studies that they even found a genetic correlation. And there is a book called The Power of When, I think, which, you know, describes in details that, you know, we all have different patterns. As you said, most of the people are morning types, but, you know, the night owls like you, they kind of struggle a bit because the whole world is geared towards, you know, waking up early in the morning and going to sleep early, like me, for example. I fit very well with that, but you definitely are the opposite end of the spectrum. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
My favorite meditation now is Om Mind. Doing the gibberish. We do a half an hour of gibberish followed by a half an hour of silence. And it is absolutely my number one meditation these days. And I'll tell you something funny, because I know you're Italian. My gibberish is Italian. I can't speak Italian. I don't know Italian. So that's the mozzarella. that becomes my gibberish.
Okay, and you may have been Italian in your past life, and it's coming out.
This is possible. I love Italians. I love all the Italians that I've met, especially through Osho. So what happens is that after the half an hour, the tape stops, and there's this silence, and I call it the Grand Canyon of silence, because I just simply sit down and everyone sits down and you can hear a pin drop. And then to move into that silence is so rich. It is the deepest silence that I recognize for an extended period of time that I've ever had in my meditation practice.
Okay, so the last question is, you lead the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new mantra by the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
I have no idea what this character called Subham would be like if Osho had not entered into my life in 1979. I am so filled with gratitude. We have several pictures of him on the wall here in the center, and every time I turn a corner and I see his face, every time I connect with some of his words, because I put a lot of his words and other master's words on our wall in the kitchen, and everybody loves to come in and read our wall. But I'm constantly surrounded by him in virtually everything that I do. And I have no idea what my life would be like without him. I know that the foundation that he has helped create, that the way that he has shown me how to move into the silence, his emphasis on meditation, his emphasis on finding ways to come into that dimension that's beyond the mind. The understandings are just growing in leaps and bounds, and a feeling of expansiveness. And the word gratitude, that's got to be such a part of this, because I don't know how to make gratitude happen. The only way I can do it, I see, is that just to invite it by being as present as I can to whatever is happening in my life. And I'm so shocked by how much life has given me, how much the friendships, the connections, winning the jackpot with Osho, being with Shanti, being with the people that are here that are wanting to move deeper inside. I mean, he's everywhere. He's everywhere. He said when he died that it would actually, he'd be more available. And I understand that, and I recognize it, that he is more available to me now than he ever was, even though there were times when he was very physically available. But that doesn't come anywhere near to the availability that now feels like it's in my marrow with him. And I love sharing a lot of the anecdotal material that I have about Osho and about my experiences with him. I use them all the time, because they're tremendously helpful for me, and many people tell me that they're helpful for them too. And I know that to be true with other people, with other sannyasins who share their life experiences. We have such a wealth to share with one another and with others that are thirsty. So, yeah, there's no way to talk about today without talking about Osho.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Subhan. That's the end of the show. I really enjoyed talking to you, connecting with you.
Bahram, thank you for doing what you're doing. And I know that many, many people that have listened to the interviews and have had the experience of all these wonderful people, how grateful they are and how grateful I am that you have done what you've done. And please continue.
Oh, definitely. I just started.
Okay, great.
Okay, Subhan. Lots of love and thank you again.
Love to you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Lavo Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit lavoshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.